It's a busy time of the year, and there is a lot going on. Things with family, things with friends, things with work. There is a lot going on this time of the year. And the preacher, of course, is trying to get as much as he possibly can in on the annual theme. And then we have some young gentlemen that are going to be up here next week as well. Next Sunday morning and Sunday evening, we'll be having Stephen Clark and Phelan Sewell be bringing us some lessons, and so you can look forward to those. And I know that both of those, in some ways, are going to be related to our theme as well. And so I think pretty much for the rest of the year, we're thinking about our theme. Because we see that clock, that window is kind of opening and closing. Closing in the sense that it's closing on this year, and opening in the sense that it's opening up to something next year. And just to prepare you for what will happen our last Sunday of the year, Lord willing, our last Sunday morning of the year, we'll be giving kind of a recapitulation of what we have gone over this year in relation to this year's theme. And then we will have a theme announcement for 2020. And Steve, I'm sure that afternoon will be able to get a nice banner for us in the back. And we'll be thinking about this new theme this upcoming year. But I wanted to remind us that just because a yearly theme comes to an end with the year doesn't mean that we can't reflect back on those things. And so thinking about past themes in regards to prayer, in regards to the fruit of the Spirit, in regards to kingdom choices, making kingdom choices, and some of the other themes that we've had, just because the year has come to an end doesn't mean that we can't reflect more on those things. I want to encourage you to do that. Even so, tonight's lesson, Jillian and Maddie, is entitled David's Consuming Desire. I've been giving them little questions to fill out during the classes, or during the sermon, rather. And so we're thinking tonight about David's consuming desire. There are a lot of different ways that you could go with that, because David was a very passionate individual. But tonight we're thinking about David's consuming desire, his great ambition to build a house for God. To build a house for God. Towards the end of the year, I tend to think back on the sermons that I've given over the course of the year. And sometimes I go beyond that scope. I know that one of the areas that I am somewhat negligent in dealing with from the pulpit are the historical books. And so we're thinking a lot tonight from 1 Chronicles. This will be at least one attempt to dig more into the historical books from the pulpit. And so we're dealing with 1 Chronicles this evening. Several places in 1 Chronicles. We'll be jumping back and forth a little bit. But definitely 1 Chronicles 28 and 29 is where we're going to spend most of our time thinking about David's consuming desire to build a house for God. But I do want to start a little bit earlier in 1 Chronicles. I'm going to be looking at 1 Chronicles chapter 17 and starting there in verse 1 and reading a little bit from there. And one thing I want to reiterate to you is that 1 Chronicles and 2 Samuel are very parallel to one another. And so you may recognize 1 Chronicles 17 as being very parallel to 2 Samuel 7. Probably spend more time in 2 Samuel 7. We'll be spending more time in 1 Chronicles today. So 1 Chronicles chapter 17, starting in verse 1, and it came about when David dwelt in his house that David said to Nathan the prophet, "Behold, I am dwelling in a house of cedar, but the ark of the covenant of the Lord is under curtains." Then Nathan said to David, "Do all that is in your heart, for God is with you." David had a consuming ambition. And this is definitely a volatile point in David's life. Just previous to this, they had moved the ark of the covenant, and Uzzah, one of David's servants, had died. Because David hadn't really thought that plan through, and hadn't made the proper priorities and dealing with that situation accurately. Shortly after this, he will have his sin with Bathsheba. And so this is a very volatile point in David's life. There's a lot going on in these years, but he has this passion that he wants to pour into God and building a house for God. He reflects on his own situation. He sees that his house is made of fine cedar. Beautiful, beautiful cedar. If you ever watch HGTV, most often, what do they do at the front of the house? They wrap things in cedar. That's the thing you do to make your house beautiful. You put cedar planks on there. You put cedar shutters. You wrap cedar around your beams in front of your house. Cedar makes things beautiful. Cedar wood is actually very costly as well because it is antifungal and it also repels bugs. And so there is a lot to be said for cedar wood. He looked at his house, which was built with fine cedar, and then he thought about God's house. God's house, as he says, is merely in curtains. First Chronicles, the previous chapter, in chapter 16, talks about a tent for the ark. And so you understand that this whole section is laden with this idea of the temple. And Chronicles definitely focuses on the temple. You see them building the temple there in 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and you see the demolition of the temple at the end of 2nd Chronicles. And so Chronicles is very much focused on this. But David reflects on his situation, his family's situation, and he sees that they are very comfortable, but no permanent house had been built for God. We're talking about 400 years moving around in a tent. And so David passionately reflects on this, and he felt that God should be first, and that God was being sadly neglected. And to a certain extent, that was true. Even so, when David makes this statement known to Nathan the prophet, Nathan says, "Do what's on your heart, God be with you." And then that very night, God gives Nathan a revelation. He says, "This is what you are to tell David. I'm going to make a house for you, David. Don't get wrapped up in physical things. I'm going to build a house for you." And that's where that Davidic covenant comes from. That he's going to build that great house, that great dynasty for David, which would culminate, of course, in Jesus. Even so, I don't know if he's rebuked for his desire to build a house for God. God says, through Nathan the prophet, "I have not requested this." But I don't see that necessarily as a rebuke. He just says, "I haven't requested this." I think there's a measure in which he's saying, "David, your priorities probably a little bit mixed up." But probably not a rebuke, I don't think. Because God does get a house built, not by David, but by David's son. Thinking about what David's intentions were and thinking about what his passions were for the Lord, we need to look at our personal prosperity in an honest fashion. And we need to see if too little provision has been made for God. What are our dealings with God compared to our dealings in our own life? The perils of prosperity are proverbial. You see them throughout the scriptures. Many fall under the spell of wealth and become absorbed in temporal concerns. Remember this parable of the sower. Some of the seed was cast on a certain soil and it was choked out. Choked out by riches and by earthly concerns. Luke 8, verse 14 tells us. Though it is true that the Lord had not required such an edifice for himself, as he makes clear to David, and though it is true that he turned the focus on the building up of David's house unto the Messiah, David's passion and intention was well directed. Is ours. Later on here, in 1 Chronicles chapter 28, 1 Chronicles 28, starting in verse 20, going through the first five verses of chapter 29. So 1 Chronicles 28, starting here in verse 20, "Then David said to his son Solomon, 'Be strong and courageous and act. Do not fear nor be dismayed, for the Lord God, my God, is with you. He will not fail you nor forsake you until all of the work for the service of the house of the Lord is finished. Now behold, there are the divisions of the priests and the Levites for all the service of the house of God, and every willing man of any skill will be with you in all the work of all kinds of service. The officials also and all the people will be entirely at your command. So he addresses Solomon, whom God had said would build his house. Notice here in 29 verse 1, then King David said to the entire assembly, my son Solomon, whom alone God has chosen, is still young and inexperienced. And the work is great, for the temple is not for man, but for the Lord God. Now with all my ability, I have provided for the house of my God the gold for the things of gold, and the silver for the things of silver, and the bronze for the things of bronze, the iron for the things of iron, and wood for the things of wood, onyx stones and inlaid stones, stones of antimony and stones of various colors, and all kinds of precious stones, and alabaster in abundance. Moreover, in my delight in the house of my God, the treasure I have of gold and silver, I gave to the house of my God over and above all that I have already provided for the holy temple, namely 3,000 talents of gold, of the gold of Ophir, and 7,000 talents of refined silver to overlay the walls of the building. Of gold for the things of gold, and of silver for the things of silver, that is for all the work done by the craftsmen. Who then is willing to consecrate himself this day to the Lord? Now this is 11, 12 chapters after he expressed this desire, and Nathan the prophet tells him that the direction that they need to move forward in at that moment is thinking about David establishing a dynasty with the blessings of God. But David acknowledges something really important here. He acknowledges that the building of God's house was a great work. This is a great work. In fact, it's so great that he tells the people, you need to help Solomon. I've done everything I can to train him, but he's inexperienced. He's not quite up to it by himself. So you need to help him. Also reminding them that God had chosen Solomon alone to head this up. The temple would require an immense amount of labor and material. Now God had forbade David's building, and there were several reasons for that. One of the most notorious reasons, one of the most well-known reasons for that is he was a man who shed blood. His life was characterized by killing and stamping out God's enemies. Even though God had forbidden David from building, David had made preparation. He began gathering treasures for the great work. And until we understand how great, how immeasurably important the work of the Lord is, we will never invest much time, effort, or resources into it. The smallest of inconveniences, annoyances, and excuses will consistently and constantly take us away from the house of God. Over in 1 Kings chapter 6, when Solomon is building the temple, 1 Kings chapter 6, that's weird, we're turning to left in the Bible, kind of throws you off. 1 Kings chapter 6. We're reading about the temple, we're reading about the building of the temple. Notice what's said about this. 1 Kings chapter 6, 37, 38. In the fourth year, pay attention to the time references. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid in the house of Ziv. Or in the month of Ziv. In the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished throughout all its parts and according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. I know sometimes we get fed up with road construction and it seems like it takes a long time. But do you remember that new bridge that they built? I know there was a lot of planning that went into it, and I don't want to belittle that. But they put that bridge up pretty quick in the grand scheme of things. And they redirected all sorts of traffic very quickly in the scheme of things. This is 7 years. Just the building. Not the planning, just the building. 7 years that went into this. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of undertaking. And the Lord's work today is no less in sheer size. Over in Matthew chapter 9, we see Jesus reflecting on how big the scope of his work is. In Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 36, seeing the people, Jesus felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest." Jesus says the work, the sheer scope of this is incredible, beyond what we can even imagine. And so we need some workers. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That's big. That's a huge scope. That's a lifetime of dedication and commitment. A lifetime of what should be a consuming desire for the work of the Lord. One of the other things that David expresses in this passage when he's communicating with the assembly in particular, in 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 1, he says that the temple was not for man. And it's interesting, and that's very critical as we understand Israelite history, because the Israelites changed that mentality and put the cart before the horse. During the days of Jeremiah, remember the people said, "The temple of the Lord. The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord." It was all about them. And in fact, it was so much about them that they actively participated in idolatry in the Holy of Holies. The temple was not for man. That was not the intention. The temple was for God. Now keep that in its right perspective. David not once thinks that God can be contained in a temple. Not once does he express that. But it is for the glory of God. Solomon and all of Israel needed to be impressed with this fact. It was to be prepared for the name of God. The temple was clearly symbolic of the church. There are plenty of places that talk about that. The church being God's temple. 1 Corinthians 1, 2, Ephesians 2, 19 through 22, 1 Peter 2, verses 4 through 10. Plenty of places that talk about God's church being like the temple, or the temple being like God's church. And it particularly emphasizes that the church is for the glory of God, not for the glory of man. The church does not belong to the members. It's God's church. The church is not about appeasing or entertaining the members. And if you do that, you do exactly what Israel did 2,600 years ago. You put the cart before the horse. David's sense of a close, intimate relationship with God prompted his impulse to serve the Lord and to bring God glory, and we too must feel such a relationship. We should have a consuming desire for the house of the living God. It is that consciousness that makes work for him possible. David, in 1 Chronicles 29, verse 3, "Moreover, in my delight in the house of my God." So it wasn't just a responsibility that he felt. It wasn't an obligation that he felt. It was my delight in the house of God. It was his joy to do this. He had set his affection, in a sense, on things above. He had set his affection to build the house because he loved this way of serving God. He's passionate about that. His love had consequences too. Because love is action, right? It's not just words, it's action. His love caused him to give his treasures. Look at these first five verses of 1 Chronicles 29. He talks about all that he had given. Just a few of these measurements. 3,000 talents of gold. You know how much one talent of gold is? A year's wages. 3,000 years' wages worth of gold. And not just any gold, not just the Walmart gold. The gold of Ophir. This is refined, this is beautiful, this is extravagant, pure gold. On top of that, 7,000 years worth of wages of refined silver. Not any silver, not big lot silver. Refined silver. 7,000 years. So between those two, 10,000 years worth of precious metals. That's a lot. That wasn't just some fluke. That wasn't just, I got to do something, so let me do this. That's dedication. That's a consuming desire. And that's not all that he gave. Those are just two of the measurements that he gave. And what does he do after this? Verse 5. Who then is willing to consecrate himself this day to the Lord? He says, here's what I've done. Here's God's plan through Solomon, my son. What are you going to do about it? He threw down the gauntlet. What are you going to do about it? He challenged others to follow his example. And guess what? They did. And verse 6, then the rulers of the fathers' households and the princes of the tribes of Israel and the commanders of thousands and of hundreds with the overseers over the king's work offered willingly. And for the service for the house of God, they gave 5,000 talents and 10,000 derricks of gold. So more than 5,000 years' wages worth of gold and 10,000 talents of silver, 10,000 years' wages of silver, and 18,000 talents, or years' worth of wages of brass, and 100,000 talents of iron. Whoever possessed precious stones gave them to the treasury of the house of the Lord in care of Jehiel the Gershonite. Then the people rejoiced because they had offered so willingly. For they made their offering to the Lord with a whole heart. And King David also rejoiced greatly. That influenced the people, the rulers, everyone was influenced by this. And you see what people did? They gave abundantly. They gave cheerfully. They gave willingly. All these words are used in regards to their giving. And guess where else they're used? In regards to our giving. In fact, I want to encourage, I want to motivate whoever is serving on the offering table next week. I want you to read through 1 Chronicles 29. You don't have to read all of it at the table, but read through it in your preparation for the table. And I want you, this is not dogmatic, you don't have to do this, but I am going to encourage you, if you're heading to the table next week, choose something from 1 Chronicles 29. That will get us in the right frame of mind. The lesson for us should be obvious. We too must willingly give and love the church. I mean, think about it. Think about it. Redeeming people and building the church cost Jesus his life. Doesn't matter how many talents of gold you give, doesn't matter how many talents of silver or bronze and brass you give, nothing can measure up to that. We have been redeemed, we have been purchased by the precious, spotless blood of Christ. And so what better motivation for us to give willingly and wholeheartedly to the work of the Lord. And guess what? That will stimulate others. That will encourage others and influence others to do the same. We want to get this church moving in the world. We want to change people's lives. Let's be influencers. Let's show our love. Several manifestations of God's love. David dreamed and planned great things for God. I think oftentimes we tend to break down personality into like dreamers, planners, builders. We tend to kind of break it down like that, adventurous sort of people. David dreamed and he planned great things for God. I think it's relatively easy to dream. Plenty of people throw out big ideas. But David planned how to fulfill his dream. And he expressed to Solomon what was on his heart. Look, just prior to this, seven chapters prior to this, so it's right in the middle of when he first expresses this to Nathan, and when it's actually kind of starting to happen here. Look at 1 Chronicles 22. He has this conversation with his son David, and look at this conversation that he has with him. 1 Chronicles 22, starting in verse 6. Then David called for his son Solomon and charged him to build a house for the Lord God of Israel. David said to Solomon, "My son, I had intended to build a house to the name of the Lord my God. But the word of the Lord came to me saying, 'You have shed much blood and have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name, because you have shed so much blood on the earth before me. Behold, a son will be born to you, who shall be a man of rest.'" Let me pause here for a minute. You know what Solomon's name means? S-L-M in Hebrew. Peace. Rest. Notice also one of David's other sons, Absalom. Absalom means "my father is rest." Let's continue on, verse 9. "Behold, a son will be born to you who shall be a man of rest, and I will give him rest from all his enemies on every side, for his name shall be Solomon. And I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. He shall build a house for my name, and he shall be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever. Now, my son, the Lord be with you, that you may be successful and build the house of the Lord your God, just as he has spoken concerning you. Only the Lord give you discretion and understanding and give you charge over Israel, so that you may keep the law of the Lord your God. Then you will prosper if you are careful to observe the statutes and the ordinances which the Lord commanded Moses concerning Israel. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear nor be dismayed. Now behold, with great pains I have prepared for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold and 1,000,000 talents of silver and bronze and iron beyond weight, for they are in great quantity. Also timber and stone I have prepared, and you may add to them. Moreover, there are many workmen with you, stone cutters and masons of stone and carpenters, and all men who are skillful in every kind of work. Of the gold, the silver, and the bronze, and the iron, there is no limit. Arise and work, and may the Lord God be with you." David also commanded all the leaders of Israel to help his son Solomon, saying, "Is not the Lord your God with you? And has he not given you rest on every side? For he has given the inhabitants of the land into my hand, and the land is subdued before the Lord and before his people. Now set your heart and your soul to seek the Lord your God. Arise, therefore, and build the sanctuary of the Lord your God, so that you may bring the ark of the covenant of the Lord and the holy vessels of God into the house that is to be built for the name of the Lord." It should be pretty clear that Chronicles is all about this ambition to build God's house. Every few chapters it's getting mentioned and getting reiterated. He expressed to Solomon what was on his heart, what was God's plan, and there was earnestness in his desire. There was passion in his desire. There was fire in him. Our souls should be occupied with God's service. We cannot do much unless we give serious thought and planning to the dreams that can be accomplished in God. As a man thinks, so he is. But it isn't just what we say that determines what we do, but our heart. We need God in our hearts. When God told David he would not build the temple, David did not forget his plan. He did not throw his plan out, but he made preparation for Solomon. I love those measures there in 1 Chronicles 22 also. 100,000 talents of gold and 1,000,000 talents of silver. And then he tells Solomon, and guess what? You can add to that. It doesn't have to stop there. His work was not superficial, but it was abundant. How often do we envision many great things, but our personal effort is little? I have a friend that I love very much, and he is a dreamer. He is a dreamer. He's got all kinds of things. He puts irons in the fire every single day. But his follow-through is sorely lacking. And I told him that. I said, you have big dreams, but you have no follow-through. That wasn't true of David. Whatever our hand finds to do, do it with all of our might, as unto the Lord. I think oftentimes we don't strive with all of the energy that we should. It's one of the reasons I run up here. Just to remind me to give it everything I have. Everything. Once we begin to use our opportunities and our talents with utmost energy, the church will grow beyond our dreams. David gave much because he fixed his mind for the Lord. And you notice too that his sacrifice was for the next generation. It wasn't so he could revel in it. It wasn't so he could put a nice plaque on the wall with his name on it to live on after he died. It was for the next generation. The sacrifices that he made were for the next generation. Do we have that sort of vision about where the Taylorsville Road Church of Christ will be in the next generation? Are we focused on that? Or are we focused and fixated on what is a foot in front of us? God's work will not end with us. The race is not over after we finish. We pass the baton on. It's not a quick 100 meters. It's a relay. It's an endless relay until the Lord returns. We need to labor even if we never see the fruit. Sometimes someone planted the seed and we put a little bit of water on there and it germinates. The person who planted that seed may never know. And sometimes we plant the seed and someone else waters that seed and we may never know. One of the great encouragements that we have from David is that he did not let rejection stop him. He did not let rejection stop him. There was no envy for the privilege that was given to Solomon, as you would typically expect, especially among royal houses. David wanted God's work to be first, regardless of who does it. Great consolation came to David in the promise that his kingdom would last forever through Jesus. David challenges Solomon to carry that mantle and to pass that mantle on. And he gives us that challenge too. Are we consumed with the work of the Lord? Or is it a marginalized, compartmentalized part of our life? Consumed or compartmentalized? Which is it? David was sincerely and devoutly on fire for the Lord, and so I want to encourage you to follow his example. Will you willingly consecrate yourself unto Jehovah God? Will you give your all for God? That's the challenge that I'm going to give you tonight. And if you in any way feel that you have fallen short of that challenge, probably all of us in some way feel that. But if you feel right now that you sincerely need the help of this congregation, you just want to share what is on your heart, you want to make your relationship right with God, let's do it. Let's do it here tonight. Let's make it right. There is no greater privilege than to be a part of the household of faith. So if you want that, I desperately encourage you to want that. If you want that, please express that as together we stand and sing.